Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Seth and Sean, Sports Radio, quarantine show number 5. At a different time, 4:30, but our NFL draft guest show. And I have to say, I don't think we're in any different of a ball game than anybody else this year, Seth. It may be the first time that you and I are probably on the same plane as all the experts.
I don't think we're anywhere near on the same plane as the experts, but it's certainly a little bit more even than usual. They still scout all year. They still have some pro days. They still have the combines. You know, they didn't get everything, but they still got more than usual.
I feel like I'm an expert. I'm just saying that right now. I think I've put enough time into this mock draft that probably is the exact. I probably put as much time into the mock draft as the first round will take. I think I have done that like 3 hours of work on the mock
draft. Wow.
It's got a lot of trades. It's got 7 trades, which I think is a little bit more than normal. I've actually mocked out the points as to who's going to get traded and for how much. And that's all coming up in a couple of minutes, maybe in 10, 15 minutes. But first, let's talk about The Last Dance. And we've previewed this on the show the last couple of weeks. We were both looking forward to watching at least some relevancy, something that is new, something that is exciting, and ESPN pushed it up
and pushed it.
Right, but I'm saying at least they pushed the timeline, right? It was supposed to come out at the end of the finals, which would have been in late June, early July, and here we are not even in May. So overall, it was well done. Like, everything about it was well done. But there are definitely certain things that I kind of shrugged my shoulders and said, I definitely learned some things. A couple of things here and there, but overall, it was a good documentary.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed it. I don't think either of us watched it live. I watched it yesterday. I don't know when you watched it. I saw it on one of the Facebooks. I'm on one of the Facebooks, Living Room GMs, run by our friend Abate Ayo. And there are people who are crushing it, and there are people who are bored, but it was just like, I expected more. I'm not really sure what you expected. It's 10 parts, so we don't know what the whole thing is going to encompass. It was enjoyable, and what's nice is it's a retrospect. The people in their 20s and 30s don't remember Michael Jordan. They just don't, or they remember him vaguely, but he's more the Air Jordan guy. He's more of a ghost than anything else. And a good example, Zach Ziskin, who is called on the show several times in the past, called me a couple days ago, and he always said, he's like, I thought LeBron was the best of all time, but after seeing this, I don't know how anyone could go against Michael. And I go, well, you didn't see Michael in his prime. He's like, well, I saw him, 97, 98. I go, that's not his prime. His prime was 91, 92, 93, when he was 28 to 30 years old, not when he was 34. And I go, how old were you during that point? He goes, 5. And I said, that's exactly my point. I saw the 86 Jordan game against the Celtics, which is probably the greatest team of all time. I remember that game. I was eight or nine years old. But it was so ridiculous. I remember watching in my living room with my dad that it's a game I've never forgotten. I remember Jordan hitting 5 three-pointers against my beloved Blazers in game one of the 92 finals. You know, a lot of people who make these comments, and this is why a lot of, you know, it kind of goes in one ear out the other, they were 30 years old now. They either weren't born or they don't remember. They're not going to remember how good Jordan was in 87, in 88, and you know, even before they won the titles.
That's right.
So it was nice to kind of get a feel for what he was, because he was a global icon before social media. I can only imagine what his life would have been today.
Okay, so the first memory that I have of Michael Jordan, truth be told, is the All-Star game where he sat out and he broke his foot. That's the first memory. I don't remember him in college. Now, granted, you and I were 6, 7 years old. I don't remember following college basketball as much when he was in college. I followed Patrick Ewing. Patrick Ewing was my guy. I don't know why he was my guy. I don't understand why Georgetown was my team, but they were my team. And I followed him, and I followed Reggie Williams and Michael Jackson. Not that Michael Jackson, the guard that was on the Georgetown teams. But I don't remember Michael Jordan at all at North Carolina, at all. Now, the one thing that I saw that they did gloss over a little bit was they showed Michael's shot, but they didn't show Fred Brown giving the ball away. And, yeah, it's kind of like Michael won the game. Well, Michael really didn't win the game, right? I mean, Michael hit the shot with 30 seconds left, and there was a very significant play thereafter. And I think they glossed over. I think they glossed over that a bit. So I didn't exactly like that part. I will tell you, what amazed me about the first two episodes was not the basketball. It was not Michael. It's how much our world has changed. So they showed airports and how people were coming up to other people. And this is before coronavirus, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, this is pre-9/11, right? When you were able to go to the gates and you were able to welcome your family home and you were able to walk into a game without a metal detector at all, like not even being patted down. You were just walked right in. And for the first, we were 18, 9/11, we were 25. So for the first 24 years of our life, Seth, you and I walked into ball games unobstructed, didn't care, here's our ticket, go, right? Wasn't even an issue.
Yep.
And now that's what got me about these two shows. It had nothing to do – I didn't really learn a whole lot that I didn't know. I learned a little bit about Scottie Pippen that I didn't know. I think they made – Jerry Krause out to be the bad guy, which I didn't exactly enjoy, because how many general managers are bad guys? And Jerry Krause is not alive to defend himself. And I didn't exactly like that they made a whole lot about how Jerry Krause was this bad, bad guy. And the whole renegotiation, which I know we're going to get into the next show with Scottie Pippen, and how Reinsdorf didn't renegotiate Scottie Pippen's contract. Ladies and gentlemen, from what I know about contracts in either Major League Baseball or in the NBA, you have never had a renegotiated contract. Ever. It made no sense. The whole premise made no sense. And to bring that up now, I get that it was a storyline, that's what Scotty wanted, but I think missing the fact that there has never been a renegotiated contract in the history of the NBA was something that glaring weakness of this story. It didn't feed into their mantra, so it didn't work.
No, it didn't.
But overall,
and, you know, it's enjoyable. It's not overwhelmingly accurate, but it's enjoyable.
Right.
And what I found interesting was the access to Jordan, which we've never really seen before. He's never been one to give interviews for the most part. He's been out of, you know, he's been out of the spotlight, relatively speaking, for 15 years. So it was a bit surprising that, you know, he kind of jumped back into it.
Well,
but,
have you heard the storyline? Hold on. Have you heard the storyline about how this came to be?
Was
so
it his kids asked for it, or someone asked for it? I don't know who.
No, so what actually happened was, in 96-97, and you'll recognize this guy's name, Adam Silver suggested recording everything about that year, everything. And they got Jordan's okay. They got the Bulls okay. They said, if we don't get Michael and Phil on board, this will never work, right? But the key to the whole thing was Adam Silver went to Michael Jordan and said, you will have sign-off if we ever do anything with this. You will have sign-off. You will have final approval of anything that this goes into. And that is the only way that we will ever publish this. And for 20 years, it sat in Secaucus at the NBA studios, untouched. Nobody did anything with it. And then they thought, oh, it would be a good idea. Somebody did. I don't remember who it was. So the reason they have access to Michael, Seth, is because if they didn't have access to Michael, we would never be seeing this.
Right.
This is going to put Michael in the best light of anything, because he's the one that's signing off on everything dealing with this. So that's the reason why you're getting a lot of access to Michael, because without him, this doesn't go through. It was very nice to see guys like Bill Weddington again. That is an amazing Fu Manchu.
It is pretty bad.
I loved it. I loved it. And to see guys like John Paxson, like the little guys, right? I'd like to see Kukoc at one point, but I don't think we're going to get that. But it'll be very interesting going forward as to where these storylines go and whether it is the Michael Jordan show or is it the 96-97 Bulls show? Because it shouldn't be the Michael Jordan show. Wasn't billed that way. But the second part, putting Pippen in the focus, was a good thing for me. I liked that. I really did. And there have been rumors of, not even rumors, but offers of trades back and forth. Tracy McGrady there was a deal. McGrady for Pippen
before that year. Pippen, yeah.
And Michael turned it down. Michael said, no way, I'm leaving. So, you know, Michael had a lot of pull. But anyway, definitely enjoyable. No question. I'll watch them, but it's not, to me, must-see TV. I don't need to see it the minute it drops.
Nope. I agree. And
so,
yeah, I agree with you. But it is enjoyable. And the way I found funny, USA Network hosted the NBA draft. Not something you'll ever see again. Just something that I realized.
Yeah, I think that's about right. Well, remember, USA may do it again. TNT does it, so why wouldn't USA do it? I mean, TNT
USA
and USA are part of
the last time, when was the last time USA Sports was it? USA really had was involved with sports?
The Olympics.
Yeah, but that who owns USA? I forget. Is it NBC?
No, it's TNT.
Or is it separate?
Turner.
Is it TNT owns
Turner
USA?
Them.
TNT owns USA?
I think Turner owns USA. I will look that up.
Okay, because they were under the NBC package. So,
yeah, so anyway, you're right. Like I said, what amazed me the most about the series, and if you'd like to call in, 760-283-0846, we're going to get to the NFL draft preview in a couple of minutes. It generally takes about an hour to go through the 30 picks, so 32 picks. So we'll get to that in a second. But the fact is, what amazed me, like you said, USA hosted the draft, right? And the airport access, and you being able to go straight into the locker room without any problems. I was amazed by the French locker room that all the Bulls were sitting on the floor. Like,
that was,
I was like,
funny.
that can't be their locker room, but it was. that was their locker room. But I the one phrase of all of them that I loved the most was Jordan when they won the French thing saying, yeah, welcome to the club. You're not a champion. This is not a championship. This doesn't count. Like, I loved it. I loved it because the moxie that he had, and I think that's what, I mean, somebody on the show said it. It was the drive. Like, that's what made Jordan Jordan. It was the drive. And I did not realize when he broke his foot, that was something I learned. When he went back to North Carolina and played, I didn't realize he went back to college when he broke his foot.
I did. I had forgotten about it, but I did know that. And, I remember hearing about the 90%, 10% chance. And a guy like Jordan, you know, he's just not built. That's it. And he wasn't. And that was such an amazing era of basketball.
I mean, yeah, and next
talked
week
about,
we
talked about the Celtics and the Lakers, but you didn't bring up Houston. You didn't bring up how good Milwaukee was with Sidney Moncrief and Sikma and Terry Cummings and all those other guys.
Yeah.
You know, the Sixers won a title, you know, right before that with Irving and Moses Malone, and then they brought in Charles Barkley. So
yeah.
All these things are, you know, it was an amazing time for pro basketball. It really was.
But let's remember, this series is not designed for the history of basketball, right? It's a prelude to getting to 96-97 and how they developed into that. And next week, I'm sure we'll get the bad boys, right, and how you conquer that to get to five championships. And because this was the sixth. So, I mean, it does weave its way through the NBA history. You had Magic. You had Michael. But I didn't think we were going to see Dr. J. I didn't think we were going to see Moses Malone.
No.
We saw some Patrick Ewing, which is really nice to see because of the Georgetown connection. But this is about the Bulls, plain and simple. And if you think that rocked, I cannot wait till they talk about the Olympics in 96 because we've all seen – well, most of us have seen the documentary and how much Jordan and Pippen were superstars on the world stage in the 96 Olympics. This will just give more unfettered access
92.
To that.
92.
Oh, 92. Excuse me. 92 Olympics. Excuse me. You are correct. Again, 760-283-0846. Before we go on, Seth, and this got me looking, and we're everybody that's listened to the show knows I'm a Knicks fan. Everybody that listens to the show or knows me knows I am a Patrick Ewing fan. Everybody that listens to the show has heard Seth say that Patrick did not live up to what Patrick could have been. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. I went back and looked at Patrick's stats. My Lord, that man was a monster in the NBA. 20-10. For 9 straight years. In an era, Seth, where you just said it, probably the best basketball era of the last 50 years. Certainly big men. He started in 85. He went against Moses. He went against Robinson. He goes against Hakeem. How is the 20-10 with a PER in the top 10 every year, an overrated player not living up to potential on a team that whose best player with him was probably an ex-CBA player or an over-the-hill Dallas Maverick named Rolando Blackman?
Did you ever feel, coming out of college, I think the reason I feel that he was overrated was because he was thought of as potentially to be could have been the greatest center of all time. He certainly never lived up to that. He was in my mind what I assume Bill Russell probably was or could have been, or he could have been that kind of player. He was an extraordinary defense. Now, again, part of it was he didn't have great teammates. Part of it is injuries took away some of it. But he became a spot-up jump shooter for the most part. He never had a great post-up game, which never developed. He was never, yes, he did not have great teammates. Either did Olajuwon, who won two titles. Either did David Robinson, who, to be fair, didn't win a title until Tim Duncan came in 99. He wasn't the scorer that Robinson was. He wasn't the all-around player that Olajuwon was. And I think the reason I see him, I guess, is overrated is also it's a New York thing. Just as so many people think, outside of New York think Jeter is an extraordinarily overrated player. Just as I thought Cal Ripken as a baseball was an overrated player when I was down in Maryland and I would get heckled for it. Not because he wasn't great, but because he wasn't at the level that either fans saw him at or in Ewing's case, I guess, that I thought he could have been. Now, again, maybe that's because of injury. Maybe it's because of his teammates. But because, I agree. He never had great – he did not have great teammates. But when I think of the top, have you ever heard his name mentioned in the top five centers of all time ever?
No, he shouldn't be. No, he shouldn't be. But I don't put Robinson in there either.
Would you put Robinson above Ewing?
No, because Robinson didn't have the longevity that Ewing did. No, I'd put Olajuwon over.
Well, he also had naval commitments. That's you can't always put that in play either.
I got a comparison here. So Olajuwon scored one more point per game, one more rebound per game, half an assist, half a steal, half a block.
Okay, so stats are relatively similar.
Agreed. And again, I agree that I would put Olajuwon over Ewing without any deterrent whatsoever. Now, I'm bringing up it. I don't know where this came from. Landofbasketball.com has player comparisons, which is tremendous. All right, so NBA seasons. Ewing played 17. Robinson played 14. Okay, and two of them, I get that you got the commitment. All right, so Robinson was on four All-NBA first teams. Ewing was on one. All total, All-NBA teams, 10-7. Robinson, defensive, 4-0. Okay, well, this is killing me. The exact same amount of points, 21 points per game. Robinson had half a rebound and pretty much half a block. Ewing had over 5,000 more points, but again, he played two more seasons.
Three more
so
seasons.
That's where that – right, that's negligible. Get it. I get it. But I don't put Robinson in the top five centers of all time either.
No.
Seth, I'd like to make the claim that I believe Patrick Ewing is actually underrated. And the reasoning is because of exactly what you just said. He came out as going to be the best center of all time. And he wasn't. Okay. But that doesn't necessarily mean being when you average 20 points a game for your career and 10 rebounds per game and 2.5 blocks per game, that you are not in the top of the league. I mean, he was an All-NBA selection 7 times in his 14 years.
Yeah.
So
he was the number 3 center of his era. And there's nothing to be ashamed of on that.
No.
High level, your top, most people's top five centers in some order are Jabbar, Chamberlain, Russell, Shaq, and Olajuwon. Give or take, those
yeah.
are usually the top
okay.
five.
I'll go with
some
that.
Capacity. The next five, you have Mikan, because I think you have to put him in somewhere, even though he's impossible to kind of correlate with. You know, Mikan,
Moses.
David Robinson, Moses. And I guess you have Ewing's at the bottom of that top 10 to me. Again, Mikan is a brutal comparison. I don't know how to do it. So, I mean, look, you know, probably Dwight Howard may be there.
Oh,
you know,
no, Howard's not in there. He's
then
not.
Nate Thurman, who I'm throwing, like Dave Cowens, whoever you put it, you know, Walton,
right, Bob
Walton if he was healthy,
yeah.
would have been. Yeah.
Any of
so
those 1970 centers that were not Kareem, yeah, those guys. Like, they're all
right.
in one big bunch, right? You weren't Kareem,
yeah.
and you played in the 1970s, and you were
right.
a center.
So
Walt
you
Bellamy,
were,
like, Willis Reed.
Yeah. Right. I mean, so for all intents and purposes, those are, you know, there are five. Moses is probably six. David Robinson's probably seven. And then you got Ewing.
Yeah.
Ewing's somewhere between eight and ten, seven and ten. It's not a bad
okay.
place to
I,
be. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I've never disputed that.
Yeah.
My dispute is similar to how New York, with New York fan bases. You know, they either destroy you or they push you above what you really are. And living in a New
Correct.
York metropolitan area, they've pushed Ewing above what he was. Ewing was a very, very good center. You want to say great, fine. But is he, in my mind, an all-time great player? No. Now, you can say, look, he's the top 10 center of all time. That makes him an all-time great, and I understand that argument. But
okay.
I don't put – you know, we've talked about all-time greats in other – you know, we've talked about what – you know, all-time greats for Hall of Fame, what constitutes – and, you know, the same – it's like that, I guess, with the Bill Simmons, the top two pantheons. He's not there for me. He's at the top of the one below that. He's a very, very good player, and with some luck, could have been the best player on a championship team if he had a better supporting cast in 94.
Correct.
But, you know,
or any other year. Well, and that's the case. In any other year, too. Look, they took the Bulls to a Charles Smith – layup. I mean, that's what it was. Charles
yes
Smith hit the
no.
layup.
Yes and no. They didn't go to game seven in that series. They went six. Unless I'm mistaken. I think they went six.
I thought
they lost
seven. Oh, okay.
I could be wrong.
I'm just saying, it wasn't just that season, right? It was against the Pacers every season.
The Pacers and the Miami Heat with Mourning and Hardaway.
They were the number two. They were the number two team in the Eastern Conference every year. Didn't matter who number one was, they were number two. And that is exactly the point to Ewing. That's your point, right? He was never number one. He was always number two, or maybe number three, depending on the time frame.
Yeah. Well, look.
Right.
By the late
okay.
'90s, that team he was not a top player anymore either. Remember, he held
no,
on.
No, he was gone in '99.
Right when they went to the conference finals behind Sprewell and Houston and Camby.
He didn't even play. Yeah.
Right. So you know, yeah, he played 17 years, but those last three or four years were not pretty.
Agreed.
But
neither were a lot of the ones, right?
I don't really remember Olajuwon's, to be honest. I'd have to look it up. I don't
know. How about being a Toronto Raptor?
Yeah, I just don't. I remember he was there. Look, most people don't go out on their own accord. Robinson went out as a champion. You know, God bless him, but he was scoring 10 points a game the last year because he had Duncan.
Yeah.
And I think Parker. Yep. I'm not sure if he was there yet or not. So.
Okay.
Anyway.
So.
Oh, just.
So let's
just
move on to the
record,
draft because
before we get to
yeah,
the draft,
sorry,
one last thing, I had to look this up. I started becoming a college basketball fan on December 26th, 1981, because
wow.
I got to go to my, I had to look up the date. The first college basketball game I ever went to, number one, North Carolina, number two, Kentucky. was played at East Rutherford, and I still have the program from it. And
wow!
This is what it was the funniest part. The people on the this Carolina team would have a freshman named Michael Jordan, or maybe it may have been the year before, I forget, because I was five, but I know Worthy was on that team. I know Perkins was on that team. But the cover was Dean Smith and Joe B. Hall, which I find pretty funny. And I still have that. I still have that somewhere.
That's tremendous. And I'll tell you, until Worthy showed up in that documentary last night, I had forgotten about Fred Brown. And then it's like, oh, yeah, where's Fred Brown in all this? Anyway, okay, so we got an hour left. Perfect timing. We have our draft preview. Again, if you'd like to call in, 760-283-0846, 760-283-0846. To give you an idea just before we start, I have done trades. I mentioned them before. When I say points, I'm saying this is off the Jimmy Johnson draft chart, which is available on profootballreference.com. So if you'd like to, generally what managers or general managers do is they take draft picks, assign them points, and if they make a trade, they want to either make out, obviously, or they want it to be close enough that it is negligible. The higher the draft pick, the more of the points. Just to give you an idea as to points, I had him here a second ago. Hold on, let me get you how much. Oh, you have it open? How
number
much is Joe Burrow?
3,000.
Okay, and how much is the end of the first round? Actually, I have that because I have that pick.
590. Kansas City is 590.
Right. So there is a huge discrepancy between the top of the draft and the bottom of the draft. And if you are making picks to go get a quarterback, there is generally a little bit of a premium that you have to add on. So if you want to go get a guy,
if you're trading up, you have to pay more.
You're going to pay more, and if you're trading up to jump somebody else who you believe is going to take the player that you want, I guarantee you will be held hostage for it. So,
yep.
With that in mind, I think we can both agree that Joe Burrow is going to be the first pick in the draft.
We do. Now, do you agree he's staying in Cincinnati?
Absolutely. There is no chance of this pick being traded. None.
Okay.
In fact, I'd say the same thing for Chase Young being number two.
Agreed. I think it's all a smokescreen with Ron Rivera about the about any interest in anything other than Chase Young.
Now, pick three I have being traded. Detroit trading this pick.
As do I.
So I have Detroit trading this pick to Miami. So they trade the third pick in the draft, which is 2,200 points, and they get back
for
the fifth pick in the draft for 5 and 26. So they get two first-round picks. They get an extra first to move up. 26 is 700 points, and 5 is 1,700 points. They get 2,400 points. They give up 22, and Miami goes and gets Justin Herbert.
I agree on Herbert. I agree on the trade. I have him taking. I have him going up to 39. I'm also giving up 5 and 39, and here's why. The Giants are not taking the quarterback. That is given. I don't think San Diego is trading. I think Miami is trading this up. I don't think there's as much of a rush to go to number three as there was at one point. I think Detroit or whoever Detroit wants, they're getting anyway at five. And I think Miami realizes they don't have to pay an ultra premium to move up these two spots. So I haven't given
and I don't
five
think
and 39, so it's relatively break even.
And I actually don't think they are giving up a tremendous premium. The tremendous premium would have been them giving up number 18. And the fact
that
they have three first round, so the three first round picks, I see 26 as being that, like, medium ground. It's a little bit more, and I agree with you. Obviously, the Giants are not taking a quarterback, And for all the smoke screens that Dave Gettleman has, he's staying put. He's not
yes,
going.
Unfortunately, he is, because nobody wants the pick, because nobody is trading
up
for 2 points.
Okay, so who do you have them taking?
I have them taking Jedrick Wills from Alabama.
As do I.
Really?
I do, and there's a reason. So why don't you tell me your reason first?
Okay, very simple. Gettleman is a offensive line, defensive line guy. They have no offensive line. Joe Judge is a Saban guy who went pretty much worked at Alabama. And Saban gave him rave reviews on Wills. I think it comes down to Wills, Tristan Wilfs from Iowa, because Iowa is also very well known for having great offensive linemen, and Isaiah Simmons from Clemson, who I would probably prefer them take. Preferably they trade down. I just don't think I don't think anyone's trading up for Tua right now. So that's my rationale.
So I don't see anybody trading back up in do I have anybody being traded in the top 10? I have the low 9 and 10 being traded. So in the lower
I have 8 and 9 being traded.
I don't believe that anybody's going to pay those premiums, which is what you're saying for Tua. Yeah, I believe you're spot on there. I think with the way that the medical reports are going right now, everybody's giving a clean bill of health, but nobody's seen them. So I don't think that is enough to drive the price. I agree 100% with your Nick Saban concept, and that is the reason why I have him over the other offensive tackles. I think he plays right tackle for the first year. Nate Solder continues to play left tackle because he did not play left tackle in college. He only played right.
Yep.
And I think you have the buildings of your offensive line with the two of them and Hernandez, and you have a center. I can't remember the center guy's name. The guy who plays center.
Flop. They're going to draft the center in the second or third.
Well, they may draft another center. But the fact is, I think you have the makings of a draft, of a line. So I completely agree that Wills is your guy. Okay. So Miami has now traded.
Actually, wait.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, we should also say how we grade who has the better draft. Because we've been doing this for 8 years now. So typically what we do is if we get it spot on, we get 5 points. If we're within a player, we get 4. If we're within 2, we get 3, so on and so forth, down to 1. I think we've been relatively evenly split over the years on who's won, or have you won more than me?
Yes, there is one where I beat Mel Kiper, and I am still relishing that. That was like 5-6 years ago. But I did. I beat Mel Kiper and was very happy about it. But anyway, but that is the way we normally go. I think in the last couple of years, you and I, between the NBA and the NFL, I think we've probably split them, but it's been so negligible of 1 or 2 points in either direction that it's kind of whatever. And the other thing, ladies and gentlemen, is we do not base it on – we base it on the order of the draft. So even if the trade does not go through, Herbert still is at number 3. He doesn't go to number 5 for Miami.
Right.
He's still staying at number 3. So we are predicting these trades. But more importantly, we're predicting the slot in which these players go. So
So we should also say one other thing. We are not scouts. We don't claim to be. We're knowledgeable football fans. And what we do know is the needs of a lot of these teams. But the Giants brought in a new defensive coordinator. I don't know if it's going to be a 4-3 or a 3-4. So you try and go, okay, the Giants have had no offensive – the Giants' offensive line was awful last year. They are going to a more of a power running game. They have Saquon. They have Daniel Jones. They need protection. So it's logic-based. It's not per se formation-based on how we make picks.
Right.
Or I don't.
And
can't grade off.
And we're also not – calling offensive line coaches. So we are basing this basically on the same reports that you all would read. We're just making our best educated guesses, and I'd like to point out that probably Seth and I read more than most people. So, especially during this quarantine period. Okay.
Also, because we have no life.
Right. So I'll go next. I have Okudua going next out of Ohio State, the cornerback, Jeff Okudua. Okudah. Detroit traded Darius Slay. They need a corner. They made out, in my opinion, with another first-round pick to move down two slots for the same guy that they would have picked at three.
Yeah, I mean, and not surprisingly, we're kind of five for five here. I have Okudah going as well. Ohio State's had such great corners over the years. Marshawn Lattimore, Chris Gamble back in the day. It's always been a position that they've done very well with. Detroit is going defense. No matter what, Patricia and Quinn need a defense to keep their jobs. They need to make the playoffs this year or they're out.
Sure.
And they have no cornerbacks, as you said. So you go with pretty much the consensus number one defensive. Number one corner in the league, corner in the draft, in Jeff Okudah from Ohio State. San Diego.
And the other.
No, continue. We got time.
No, I was going to say the other thing is, ladies and gentlemen, we generally get the first 10 picks. The first 10 picks are pretty consensus picks. And then we kind of start varying around between the two of us as to where the players go. But most of the time we get probably 80 to 85% of the same players in different order. So that's where the variety lands. So, okay, I'm sorry. With the sixth pick, the Los Angeles Chargers, with one of the worst logos in history, select.
They go for Tua. And here's why. They have no draw right now in L.A. None. And this is a team with talent. You have Ingram and Bosa on the back end. You have Keenan Allen. You re-signed Ekeler. You are a good team who had an awful year based on injuries, and as usual, you're kicking stunk. So you need a reason for people to watch you. Phillip Rivers is gone. And even if you have a bridge year with Tyrod Taylor to Tua, if he's really not healthy, Tua is a draw. And if healthy, could have challenged for the number one overall if Joe Burrow hadn't had the greatest year in the history of college football. So I think you go Tua.
Okay, and I go the opposite route. I think you're right. Tua would be a draw, but in a couple of years. I don't think they're playing for a couple of years. I think they're playing for next year. And because of that, I have Andrew Thomas, the left tackle from Georgia. I think you just traded away Russell Okung. You got in Trey Turner. You have Brian Beluga. This is a good offensive line. Tyrod Taylor is a decent quarterback. He's not a great quarterback, but they're hoping for at least one or two years of Tyrod Taylor bringing a guy maybe next year that does this. I don't think with the sixth pick of the draft, you're looking for 2 years from now when you are an immediate contender, which they are. The Chargers, if they had decent kicking and decent quarterbacking last year, which is not Phillip Rivers, although fantasy-wise, Phillip Rivers is great. He also threw, I think, 20 interceptions. If you had a decent guy, and now you have Eckler running the ball, I'm sure they'll draft another running back in the second or third round that will replace Melvin Gordon. This is a running game. This is a running team. Anthony Lynn is a running backs coach. They take Andrew Thomas. And this is where the deviation is going to start. Okay.
Yep.
Although I think in number seven, we're probably going to be in the same ballpark. For Carolina, although I think you're going to pick Simmons and I'm going to pick Brown. So I got them picking Derek Brown up the middle, defensive tackle. They haven't had a good defensive tackle in a very long time in that team. So I have them taking Derek Brown, who may be the safest pick in this draft. For me, you know what you're getting with him. Him and Thomas, I think, are the two safest picks in this draft.
And you're right. I went Isaiah Simmons. Keekly retired. Yeah. Thomas Davis left last year. Their back seven is just not, you know, they lost Bradbury. They needed some kind of Swiss Army knife player who can kind of play a little bit of everything, and that's Isaiah Simmons, the best athlete in this draft.
Agreed.
Okay, so I have a trade here. I have Arizona trading from 8 to 14. I have Tampa trading up. And to give you your numbers, Tampa trading 14 and 45. So it's 1,100 and 450 up to Arizona at 1,400. And there, Tampa is taking Andrew Thomas, the offensive lineman for Georgia, because they need an offensive lineman.
They do. They need an offensive lineman. That makes perfect sense for me. I think it would take more to jump that high. I think Steve Klein wants the best player for him. And for him, that's Isaiah Simmons. Isaiah Simmons could be his new Tyrone Mathieu, except better and more towards the front of the line like a Dante Buchanan was supposed to be.
Deion Buchanan.
Deion Buchanan, excuse me. Thank you. Deion Buchanan was supposed to be. You see, ladies and gentlemen, we don't get every name right, but we know who we're talking about. And he spent a lot of ammo on the offensive side of the ball. He needs to use some on the defense. With Simmons and Chandler Jones, that could be a playoff team in the NFC West with DeAndre Hopkins coming. So I have them going with Isaiah Simmons. So here at Jacksonville, I have a trade. Where is my trade? Okay, so Jacksonville at number 10 trades with Atlanta.
No, it's number 9. Jacksonville is 9.
Darn it. Number 9. Trades with Atlanta at 18. And yes, that is – no, Atlanta's 16.
Atlanta's not at 18. Atlanta's at 16.
I said they're at 16. I just messed that up. So 9 and 16. Okay. So Jacksonville trades the 9th pick to Atlanta for the 16th pick and their second rounder, 47th overall. So that's 1,430 points going to Jacksonville, 1,350 going to Atlanta. Atlanta needs a corner more than anything else. C.J. Henderson is their guy who may have better coverage skills than Okuda. Maybe I'll get that name right at one point. Better than Okuda, according to the scouts, not according to me, according to scouts, he may have better coverage skills. The Thomas Dichroff has no problems, none whatsoever, going up to get the guy that he wants at the expense of the rest of the draft. He did that with Julio Jones. So I have them giving their first and their second to move up. What? Move up 7 spots.
7 spots.
To go get CJ Henderson.
And I actually have almost the exact same trade. Same teams. I actually threw in a next year either 4th or 5th. Because Atlanta is desperate for defensive help. Beasley is gone. Their corners are Trufant's gone. So my question, I originally was going to go Henderson. And I ended up going because he hadn't been picked yet. I picked Eric Brown, who is also, you know, who's considered, as you said, one of the safest picks in the draft. Atlanta is in a do or die situation. And if they don't make the playoffs this year, both Dimitroff and Quinn are gone. They got to kind of go all in on that. So now it's number 10. And
well,
I have
hold
Cleveland
on, hold
holding.
On.
They,
oh,
sorry.
Well, we'll do it after the 10th pick. Go ahead.
Okay, so I have Cleveland.
So 10th pick in the draft.
Yep. Cleveland. I have them holding. Yep. They need offense. I have them going offensive lineman because they need that. And I have them going Beckman from Louisville.
Okay.
Hello?
I'm here. I'm still here. Okay.
Okay. So
I have a trade here as well. Cleveland, who has no 5th and no 7th pick in this draft, trades the number 10 pick to Miami. Miami, with the 18th pick, jumps back up into the top 10. So they trade the 18th pick, the Texans' second-round pick for next year, which they got in the Laremy Tunsil trade, and a 2020 third pick, which is approximately 1,540 points. No, sorry, 1,440 points. To jump back into the top 10, Cleveland gives up 1,300 points to pick Tristan Wirfs, the tackle from Iowa.
Interesting.
Now Miami has their quarterback and they have their tackle. And they still have they do not have a first-round pick anymore, but they do have a second. I think they have 2 seconds.
No, they have number, theirs they and have number 20. They've picked number 20.
No,
oh,
I
you
traded
have,
it to Detroit.
Right, I don't have
I traded
I
it to
have,
Detroit.
I still have them having 26 seconds.
So to me, they have two top 10 picks, and now they have 2 second-round picks as well. So enough to formulate what they would need on an offense. So, ladies and gentlemen, out of the top 10 picks, the only difference that we have is that I have Wirfs and Henderson, and Seth has Tua and Becton. So it's 8 out of 10. Like I said, normally we have the same picks, just in different spots. Okay, with the number 11 pick in the draft, which is great because I get to pick the Jets. The Jets select, thank God, Mekhi Becton, the tackle out of Louisville, who I have wanted the entire time. And he's the only tackle left, and do not take a wide receiver. Go with it. I think it's either Becton or a trade, and I think Douglas stays here and grabs Becton.
And I have him going offensive lineman. I have him going with, who is my last one picked. Becton, the issue with Becton is potential monster, highest ceiling, lowest floor.
Yep.
And, you know, we'll see. I mean, he weighs 3'6", 370, great athlete, but apparently likes cooking more than football. So it's a bit of a problem. All right, but it is a solid – look, you needed to go either offensive line or wide out. And
yep.
It's a deep enough wide out draft that you can go up and you can handle that. You can get a wide receiver later early in the second or – potentially later in the first. Dun, dun, dun. Raiders are picking at 12. They have a couple of needs, wide receiver, cornerback, potentially QB. I have them going cornerback. I have them taking Henderson from Florida.
And as you said before, teams in new places need draws. And for the Las Vegas Raiders, they take Tua at 12 to be their draw, not this year, but next year. Okay, 13th pick in the draft, San Francisco, via Indy. San Francisco is going to move down. So San Francisco does not have any, I think it's second, third, or fourth round pick. So they're going to move. Yep. I actually have them moving twice. But the first time, they're going to move 13 to Denver for 15. And in that, they are going to pick up a 2020 third-round pick from Denver. Denver has 3/3. So the last of them is number 95. So 1150 goes from San Francisco to Denver. And 1170 goes from Denver to San Francisco. And Denver picks up Judy.
Interestingly enough, I actually have Judy going to San Francisco. I'm not sure he's the right fit for San Francisco, but he's the best wide receiver in the draft. And San Francisco, who doesn't need a heck of a lot, but they could use a wide out to help with Sanders gone, DK Metcalf, physical genius, but a physical monster, or Debo Samuel, excuse me, I mix up him and Metcalf. The monster, Judy's the best route runner in the draft. I agree, if he's there, it's a no-brainer. And I think it's going to be, look, I think it's going to be hard for you guys to pass on Judy at 11. I think it's the right thing to do, but this draft, as we said, is so deep and wide out that you can get someone, you know, that you can get someone later. I now have Arizona at 14, having traded back with Tampa. I have them going defense. I have them going, who I have them going? Just stuck. They got off the guy from South Carolina. Damn it.
You have Kinlaw?
Kinlaw.
Jarvis,
yeah,
Kinlaw.
Javon Kinlaw. Thank you.
Okay.
Because especially that front seven is bad.
And surprisingly, I have Kinlaw here as well.
Jeez.
But I just have them going to Tampa. Wait a second. So you had Kinlaw. Wait. What was the trade with Kinlaw?
8 for 14 and 45. I have Arizona.
Oh, so Tom. Oh, I'm on the wrong side. Hold on. So, okay. So you had. Sorry, I'm missing this up. So you had Thomas going to New England, right? No, Thomas going to Tampa.
Yes, I have Thomas.
Sorry,
Yep,
and you have Kinlaw going to Arizona. The problem is, I am thinking of Tom Brady, and I immediately go to New England. So I was like, oh, so he went to New England. Okay, so Denver. I have Denver making another trade. So Denver now makes a trade. Because now this is owned in my draft, this is owned by San Francisco because 13 got traded down to 15. Now 15 gets traded from San Francisco to the Raiders. So San Francisco actually makes a trade with two AFC West rivals and moves down again, in which they get another third round pick. Since the Raiders also have three third-round picks, they will get the middle one, number 81. So they will get the Raiders' number 19 and a 2020 third for San Francisco's number 15. So now San Francisco is now at 19, and the Raiders pick CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, I have Denver going CeeDee Lamb, and the funny part is, Jesus, we really are pretty close here. This is kind of annoying. You know, the Raider, it's funny because I almost wonder if they're going to go Henry Rugg if with Denver. Well, I guess with you, it's a trade down. So I have. Yeah, we'll
no,
get to it.
Trade
we'll
off.
Get to it. Yeah,
the Raiders
Denver
trading
off. Down, the Raiders trading up. Yeah. So, all right. So then it's 16.
No. No. Denver traded up. Denver traded up to get Judy.
Okay, San Francisco trading back and then trading back and the Raiders trading up. I got
correct.
It. Right.
Okay.
So
now we're
at 16.
Now we're in Atlanta.
So Atlanta is again, I have Atlanta having traded this, so this is Jacksonville for me. Because Atlanta
me too.
Traded So I have now Jacksonville, who needs defense, especially with Yannick Ngakoue going somewhere. They need a defensive defensive end now called quote unquote the edge. So I have them going from LSU, Clavon Chaisson.
Yeah, me too. I have them going Chaisson too. He'll play very well with Josh Allen. The difference is, we had different players being traded that Jacksonville took. That's the difference. So you had Brown, and I had Henderson. That's the flip at this point. Okay, so now we have Dallas on the clock.
And Dallas is going to stay here for now. And they need safety help, having lost Byron Jones, having lost Orlando Scandrick, and they're taking Xavier McKinney out of Alabama.
This is really annoying, because I know we don't go all on the same websites and read the same stuff, but unfortunately I have the same thing. As you said, their secondary has been hampered. If Chaisson had fallen, I think that may have been the pick. Their back set, their secondary is troubled. And I agree. I have McKinney at 17 going to Dallas.
Okay, I think 18. We may differ a little bit coming up. So who you got at 18?
I guess the biggest trade of my first round. I have New Orleans trading 24, 88, and 130. So it's a first, a third, and a fifth.
Yep.
Up to 18 to Miami. Or in Miami, mm-hmm. just going back to 24. New Orleans trading up to get the Drew Brees replacement, Jordan Love.
So this is the back end of my trade with Cleveland, with Miami trading up to get worse, right? So they traded worse. They traded to get it up into the top 10. Now they're at 18, and this is the bottom. And Cleveland still needs an offensive lineman, and they get one even at 18, maybe not to the caliber of Worf's, but they do get Josh Jones. So 18 to Cleveland, Josh Jones. I do really like the Jordan Love. I'm not sure they have to trade up to get him, but we'll see. Well, I guess that depends on your next spot. So next, I have, if you recall, this is a trade down and then another trade down. So now San Francisco finally picks. They picked up 2/3 to go down. Where were they originally? 13 to 19. They picked up 2 third-round picks, which is good value to go down 6 picks in this draft. They need a cornerback. They need another corner because Richard Sherman's getting old, and that's where they basically are making their money, is in the secondary. And I have them taking Tristan Fulton, the cornerback out of LSU.
Okay. So I think I misspoke on something a little bit before. So when I had when Jerry Jeudy went 13, he went to Philly. I don't know if I said that. I think I started about San Fran with Debo. Philly trades up 21-53 and 160. Okay. Philly traded up 21-53 and 168 to go from 21 to 13 to get Jeudy.
Okay.
So you asked, why do I have why is New Orleans trading up to get Love? Because I think the Raiders take him at 19 if he's there.
Okay,
and
fair. Got it.
So to me, for New Orleans, this is, you know, again, New Orleans doesn't really need very much. You can get a wide receiver in the second round to help Michael Thomas, and that's really all you need anyway, either that or a linebacker. So,
yep.
What have the Raiders always been known for?
Speed.
I'm asking you. What?
Speed.
Who's the fastest guy? Who is the fastest player in this draft? Fastest wide out in this draft?
Henry Ruggs.
There you go. So.
Okay.
So right, to me, it's the most logical pick. They need a wide out. They need speed. You and Henry Ruggs III from Alabama ran a 4.28. There you go.
What's interesting is if your trade doesn't work out for Jordan Love, and Jordan Love gets picked by Las Vegas, we both have Vegas taking a quarterback. We just have them in different spots.
Well, yep.
So, okay. You have Jacksonville on the clock at 20.
I do. So Jacksonville, as we said, needs to completely rebuild their defense. I've already had them trade back where they took the Chaisson from LSU. I have them going linebacker here. And they need, you know, Paul Bazzoni's been out a couple of years, has been out a year or two. Miles Jack has been solid, but then he needs some help. Although I think they brought in a linebacker as well. But I have them going to kind of run their defense. Kenneth Murray, the linebacker from Oklahoma.
Okay, so Jacksonville just signed Joe Schubert to run their offense, their defense, from Cleveland,
yeah,
and signed him to, I believe, a four-year, $48 million contract.
Yeah, then the pick doesn't make a house. Whoops.
No. Well, here I have Kansas City trading up from 32 to 20. So they're going to give up the 32nd pick in the draft along with a second-round pick, which is exactly the same amount of points as the 20th pick. So they're getting a first and a second. I think Jacksonville, as we have seen many times before, is trying to rid themselves, just get younger players, tons and tons of younger players, and accumulate draft stock. And I think that this is part of what they're going to do. They still have the pass rusher, Yannick, I can never pronounce his last name, that they'll be looking to trade during the draft as well. So they trade with Kansas City for the last pick in the first round and a second round pick this year, which leaves Kansas City with this pick, the 4, 5, and 6. But at the same time, they are the Super Bowl champs, and they go up and get Henry Ruggs III.
Oh God,
at 20. So you have Ruggs, Hill, and Hartman all running routes for that team next year.
Wow.
How do you like that?
Sheesh. Okay.
Good luck to the corners. Good luck to the corners. Okay. So Philadelphia, and the thing is, they had to trade up if they wanted Ruggs, because I have Philadelphia next, and Philadelphia would have taken him. Like, in my opinion, if Ruggs is there at 21, this is a Philadelphia pick. They needed to go get him. So instead of that, yep, Philadelphia has to draft another wide receiver. And they do. They take Justin Jefferson, the wide receiver out of LSU.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's the right fit. I actually have San Francisco. That's why. I have San Francisco trading back from 13. I have them going corner because they can always use a corner. And I have them going Kristen Fulton.
Yeah, I'm going Kristen Fulton. Okay, hold on. Okay, so you are on the clock for Minnesota.
Minnesota 22, they're going best player available. So the question is, do they go wide out because they traded Stephon Diggs? Or do they go defense, which has been Mike Zimmer's way? Now they have two picks, 22 and 25, thanks to the trade with Buffalo. I have him going here. I have him going defensive end. Gross Mattis, the defensive end from Penn State.
Okay, so I think that Minnesota, with the loss of Trey Waynes, not loss, they just let him go, amongst other cornerbacks, are going to need a corner. Now, it would be very interesting if they went and got Stephon Diggs' brother. I mean, it would be very interesting based on what happened. And because of that, there's no way I'm giving him Trayvon Diggs, because I just don't see how that works. I don't see how that works out. So I have them going with A.J. Terrell here, the cornerback out of – where is he? Out of Clemson. Okay. New England. Okay, New England at 23. Now, New England needs a whole lot of stuff.
Trading back.
Right? What?
I said,
am I right?
You have them picking or trading? Do you have them picking or trading back?
I have them picking. I actually have them picking. I know it's hard to understand, but I actually have them picking this pick, and it's for an edge rusher. It's AJ Epenesa. Out of Iowa. And part of this to me is all about the Bill Belichick tree and how Kirk Ferentz is part of that tree. And as we said with Joe Judge, I think it's going to be – this draft is going to be a lot about connections and how the players – how you can get referrals from coaches that you know. I think Belichick goes to Ferentz, and that's where he winds up with Espinosa.
Okay, I'm going to ask for a bit of a change, because I forgot that Jacksonville signed Joe Schubert, because my mind is full of 90,000 different things. So I'm actually going to have Murray go to New England, having lost Jamie Collins. I'm going to have them take Kenneth Murray from Oklahoma.
Okay, and
Jacksonville also needs wideouts desperately, because they have DJ Shark and a whole, and Westbrook is and a whole lot of nothing. So I'm going to have them go Denzel Mims from Baylor.
Hold on. Who? Who? I'm not
Denzel
joking.
Mims.
Who? Mims. Okay. Got it. Okay. New Orleans on the clock at 24.
Okay. For me, it's Miami, because I traded up to get Jordan Love. So Miami has their quarterback, and now they get their offensive lineman. I think the same one that you took, about six picks further back, Josh Jones from Houston.
Well, actually, I had Jones going to Cleveland in the trade, because Wirfs went to Miami. but we're having similar concepts. But for me, you're right. New Orleans does go get Jordan Love. They just don't have to move to get him, because once Tua goes at 13, nobody else is taking a quarterback.
Nope.
So at 24, Jordan Love stays here, and they get themselves their quarterback for the future. I completely agree. That's where they'd be looking. Okay. Now, there are two things that Minnesota needed more than anything else. They needed a corner, and they need a wideout. They got their corner earlier. They get their wideout here at 25. T. Higgins, wideout, Clemson.
Right position, different player. Jalen Reagor, wide receiver, TCU. A little bit more of the Diggs type, a little bit smaller, 5'11", 6 foot, but runs but an absolute and utter speedster. And so that makes sense. So you have him going Higgins, which makes all the sense in the world. So
wait,
now it's my – for me, it's my
– Hold on. Who?
Jalen Reagor.
No joke.
Wide out. TCU.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking for TCU. I don't see any wideouts in TCU. Hold on. Nope, nothing. I got nothing. Like, absolutely nothing. I don't even know how to spell the guy's name. Hold on.
R-E-A-G-O-R.
Oh, there we go. R-E-A-G. Yep, okay, got it. Reagor. Got it. Okay, go ahead. So you have Miami on the clock here at 26.
That is true. I have Miami on the clock. And I'm kind of intrigued. Miami can go in a bunch of different directions, but they have no running back. Jordan Howard is not a three down back. They traded Drake last year. I haven't going the most electric running back in this draft. We're finally taking a running back and going Swift from Georgia.
I like Swift.
DeAndre Swift.
I'm a big fan of DeAndre Swift. Okay, so I have – this is Detroit's pick, because in the first – because in the Justin Herbert trade, they got the 26th pick. And another thing that you always need when you're later on in the draft, you go for offensive linemen. And after going with Frank Reagor – oh, remember that name.
Jalen. Who the hell is Frank Reagor?
Is it Reagor or – it's Frank Frank Ragnow, the center from Detroit. They have started building their offensive line. They will continue to build their offensive line with Austin Jackson, the offensive tackle out of USC.
So you have them taking Jones and Jackson?
No, this is Detroit's pick.
Oh, you have Detroit's pick.
And I don't have Miami taking Jones at all. I have Miami taking Wirfs at 10. They traded back. Cleveland got Jones. And Jackson went to Detroit.
I apologize.
All right.
Wait.
So if there's one thing you can count on in an NFL draft, Seattle will not make their first-round pick.
They will trade back.
They will trade back. And I got them trading back. So I have them. I have Dallas re-entering the draft.
Holy crap. So do I.
So I have Seattle at 27 trading with Dallas. Dallas gives up number 51, their second-round pick. A second-round pick in 2021 and a 2026 round pick, which equals 726 points. No, 706 points to the 680 that Seattle is giving up. And they make the trade, and they go get Ruiz, the center that I was hoping that would fall for the Jets in the second round.
Oh, my God. No, I'm saying this because I will take a picture of this. I have Seattle trading with Dallas, 51. Next year is number 2, and pick 123.
I don't know what 123 is. Is that 6?
Fourth round pick.
Okay.
And going up and getting Cesar Ruiz from Michigan. Jesus Christ. That's ridiculous. And for those of you who are wondering, we don't even talk about this. We have no discussions about who you pick. The only thing I know is he made trades. Okay, Baltimore. Well, what does Baltimore always go for? And what does it always work well for Baltimore? They go for linebackers. And oh, Jesus. And they'll be tempted to trade back, I think, because there's so much depth here, but to get Patrick Queen from LSU.
Yep.
Oh. You're killing me.
The only other one would have been Murray, but I don't have Murray going in the first round.
Jesus.
Yep.
Okay.
He's the only other. All right, Tennessee with 29, and we got 13 minutes. So Tennessee with 29. Tennessee lost Jack Conklin. They need some linemen. They're going for Ezra Cleveland with 29.
They also need defensive line help, traded Jarrell Casey. They don't have a great pass rush. I have them going AJ Espinosa from Iowa.
Woo! We have a difference.
There you go. Green Bay at 30. There's no question of what Green Bay wants. It's a question of which one they're going to take. Green Bay needs a wideout, period. So I have them, you know, they have Devontae Adams, and then they got a whole lot of nothing. So I have T. Higgins from Clemson.
And I agree that they need a wideout. And, again, I'm screwing myself and my New York Jets by having them take Michael Pittman out of USC, who I, again, one of the guys, him with Ruiz, are two of the guys that I wanted to fall to number 11 in the second round. But who knows? The Jets may trade up. But that's not Joe Douglas's style. That's not Joe Douglas's style. Not going to happen.
Okay.
All right.
You're picking at 31.
I am picking at 31. I'm trying to remember who this is. Okay. So at 31, San Francisco just lost C.J. Buckner. Sorry, not C.J. Buckner. Brandon Buckner. And because of that, at 31, you generally go for either offensive or defensive line help. And here I have them replacing Buckner with another defensive lineman, Marlon Davidson, defensive line out of Auburn.
49ers, trade back from 31.
No!
As the New York Football Jets trade 48 and 79. To get, in my mind, the most underrated player wide receiver in this draft, the guy after Jerry Jeudy is the best player I saw last year, Laviska Shenault from Colorado. You can go look up the name. You seem to be confused by a lot of the wideouts that I'm taking.
No, I got him.
Dude,
really?
He's a stud. The Patriots have agreed to trade Rob Gronkowski to the Buccaneers. Holy crap.
No surprise. Well, you know O.J. Howard or Cameron Brake's coming back.
Traded for a fourth-round pick.
Well, there's your fourth-round pick that you can't use anymore.
Wow.
You know what that means, though, right? That means he's playing next year.
Yeah.
You can't give up a fourth-round pick for a guy that's not going to play. And the other thing is, he would have made life if he had unretired. Gronkowski would have either had to be traded or released. He had a $7 million cap hold, and if he had unretired right away, New England would have had to make room. They would have had to cut players. They don't have enough cap room for him. So he forced this trade, and Brady obviously helped him out with it. But, yeah, there you go. From WWE to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. By the way, that pick that the Jets were giving up in that trade, is that our Leonard Williams pick?
No. Although I think that may make more sense. No, it's not actually. Are we going to really
because
talk about
Leonard Williams? Well, I was going to thank you again for it, if that's the case. Okay.
No, it's not the Leonard
Williams. 9 minutes. 9 minutes left. Jack, well, Kansas City on the clock for you.
What does Kansas City really need? Well, let's be honest. They need
nothing.
They're the defending champions. They need nothing. But they could always use more corners. So I'm going A.J. Terrell from Clemson.
Okay. And with me, if you have too much of pass rush, you never have enough of pass rush. And I have them going the pass rushing specialist out of Penn State, Gross Matos. So overall, Seth, I think we have one or two guys that are different. I know I don't have Murray in my draft at all, which surprises me after thinking about it. I also do not have Mims in my draft. You do not have Jefferson.
So that's okay.
Right. Well, that's part of it.
I
don't have Chenault.
Probably should have had Jefferson in the draft because he was going to go in the first round. So that was silly.
So I don't have Chenault. I don't have Swift. I don't have Rieger. I don't have Murray. I don't have Mims. I think that's it. And you don't have Fulton.
Davidson, Pittman, Cleveland, Jackson,
Jefferson.
And Jefferson. Although I'd probably like to trade Jefferson for Mims. So I'm going to trade.
Okay.
I'm going to trade Jefferson for Jeff. I'm going to put in Van Jefferson.
You can do
I'm making it less. Yep. And I was Mims drop out. They're going wide out. So I'm okay with it. One of our more interesting trades. That is the most detailed draft we've ever done. Oof.
Yeah. Well, that's what quarantine helps you get. I mean, it's detailed drafting, right? We've never actually outlined the trades. I'd be very interested to see how the trades match up, if those trades actually do happen, how well we do on the trade themselves. Like, I think that might be more impressive if we can get the trades right. I love the fact that we both picked Cesar Ruiz going to Dallas with that pick.
And for those of you who are interested, I think we're going to run we're going to run a Zoom on for the first round of the draft. So, Sean,
yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to be there for the whole thing. But what time does the draft start? 7 or 7:30?
I thought 8.
Oh, good. 8's better. I like 8. 8's good. I like 8. So
let's see what time it's.
It's definitely be predicted to be the most watched draft in history, without any doubt on my mind that it will be, because everybody wants something, right? Everybody wants a little football fix, which is tremendous. By the way, so we're in our last 5 minutes. So if you'd like to go first, go ahead. If not, I am happy to.
You go first. I don't have anything off the top of my head.
Okay. To the governor of Georgia, you stupid moron. Yes. I'm not going to even say your name. I'm not going to even say your name. Because you are an absolute and utter moron. I love the fact that I can say this freely without repercussion, without anybody. Look, there are plenty of people that will get on me if they heard it, but I don't care. Let's open up the state. Let's go for it. Okay. So what are we going to open up, moron? We're going to open up. Oh, by the way, these things are only open with social distancing measures in place. So now let's get to the businesses that can be opened. Massage parlors, nail salon, hair salons, hair cutteries, barbers, yeah, all those, barbers, gyms, bowling alleys.
Congratulations.
You think I'm going to a gym? You think I'm going anywhere near a gym? I will tell you right now, the social distancing at a nail salon, please tell me how that works. Or better yet, a massage parlor. Tell me how that works. Am I going to use a stick to massage somebody? I mean, are you a moron? I mean, it is beyond moronic, Seth.
Beyond, you know why he did this, right?
I do. It's unemployment garbage. It's so then people cannot claim that they cannot work. I get it. It's fiscal. I get it. But if you're going to put lives at stake for money, you're committing political murder. And second of all, you are a moron. Like, I just don't have any other word to describe this action, in my opinion. And maybe somebody can come to the defense of sticking their fingers in a bowling ball or wearing somebody else's shoes at a bowling alley and how that involves social distancing. Are we all going to be on lines at the gym and do circuit training? And then there are only lines that can get you in and out of the gym? And the locker rooms can't be open, right? Because if the locker rooms are open, oh, my God, we're going to shower near each other. Definitely within 6 feet. Seth, this boggles my mind. Okay, I got nothing else. You are a moron. Not you, Seth. Governor, go. You got 90 seconds.
I just kind of want to second what Sean said. You are a bleeping moron. I get why you're doing it. Moron. I get why you're doing it. It kind of explains everything that you've done, as far as I can tell, although I am not a native Georgian, from how you won your election. It kind of fulfills everything. It makes all the sense in the world. You don't have to spell it out. Nobody's that stupid, except maybe you, because you're a moron. I'm good.
Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy the draft. That was blunt enough. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy the draft. For Seth Kamens, this is Sean Palmer, backsportspage.com, Blog Talk Radio, Seth and Sean Sports Radio. And we'll see you next week with the tally and the Cesar Ruiz trade. See you, everybody. Woo-hoo. Have a good day.